chapter 7, verse 28 of the Bhagavad Gita, with your moderator, Dr. Anil Mehta, at the Bakersfield Chinmay Mission.
Last week, we talked about why do people take birth, and it is because of the ignorance of the vasanas and not the right understanding of their true nature, and being caught up in the desires, people then take repeated births again and again, and caught in the pair of opposites, likes and dislikes, and that's why people suffer and do not realize the truth, that they are in fact the immortal self. And today this same idea is being continued by the Lord himself, where he says how we can go beyond these pairs of opposites, how we can go beyond these pairs of opposites and realize our true nature, which is the immortal self, the Brahman, the consciousness, which is actually what we really are. But very practical steps are given how to reach that state or how to experience the state which we already are. It is not something you have to reach or somewhere you have to go. Self-realization is not something that in the future, maybe after dying, I will go to heaven and realize. It is something that you can experience here and now. In fact, you really are that, but it is only ignorance that makes you think that you are this limited body. That is what he's telling us. So in the verse number 28, chapter 7, verse number 28, he says, Yesham Twantagatam Papam.
Yesham Twantagatam Papam.
Jananam Punya Karmanam.
Jananam Punya Karmanam.
Te Dvanda Moha Nirmuktaha.
Te Dvanda Moha Nirmuktaha.
Bhajante Mam Dridhavritaha. So Yesham, these people, he's talking about the wise people, he says, too, but the ones in the first, in the 27th, he had talked about the ignorant people, people like us, but now too, but now he's talking about the wise people. Yesham tu antagatam papam. Papam means the sin. Antagatam, they have gone to the end. So one whose sins have ended, those wise people. And what kind of people are they? Jananam. These people, Jananam, these people are Punya Karmanam. They do meritorious deeds. So they have given up their sins and they have performed good actions. Punya. So Pap and Punya is sin and merit. Jananam, Punya Karmanam. So they have given up their sinful actions. They are doing actions that are pure. And what happens to them? They dvandva moha nirmuktaha. Dvandva means the pair of opposites. We had talked about that before. We'll again maybe a little bit briefly refer to that. Dvandva moha, the delusion of the pair of opposites, nirmuktaha. They are completely liberated from the delusion of the pair of opposites. And then what do? The Lord says, bhajante mam dridha vritaha. They worship me dridha vrita, with very firm austerity. Firm vow means a firm conviction that alone is the goal of my life. When they are firmly convinced about that, that is called dridha vritaha. So we'll talk a little bit about this idea of papa. What is papa? Papa we consider as sin, and sin we consider as wrong action or a wrongful action. But they say that papa is anything that takes you away from your divine nature. Because in reality, we are all divine, and any actions that take me away from my divine nature make me a sinful person. So in fact, we are all that Om, that Brahman, that consciousness, but it is our vasanas, our selfish desires that shield us from this immortality, from this nature. And the saint, in the saint, we find that that person has very minimum of selfish tendencies. His actions are done to serve the world. But most of us, driven by our desires, selfish desires, we do more and more to acquire things for the body, you know, more pleasures, more joys for the mind, you know, that is fun, this is fun, let me go, and more success and more. Again, we are not saying that one should not have comforts or have joys or have success, but that should not be the only preoccupation of the individual. And that's what we find, that we get so caught up in this pair of opposites, dvandva, moha. It says like heat and cold, or health and ill health. And so for this body, I will do anything to acquire comforts for the body and do things that are illegal, immoral, you know, and all those. That's what they say, that in this world, somebody said that everything that we enjoy is either illegal, immoral, or fattening. Anything that we enjoy is either illegal, immoral, or fattening. So that is what happens, that people want to acquire more and more things for their body, and that becomes the sole preoccupation of that individual. And then when he does not get it, then he's caught in the pairs of opposites. I got what I wanted, I'm happy. I didn't get what I want, I'm unhappy. And last week we had heard Buddha saying that what if you get what you do not want, that is sorrow. Or if you do not get what you want, that is also sorrow. So this individual is caught in the pairs of opposites. So one day he's happy, one day he's unhappy. One day he's successful, one day he's unsuccessful. And with that preoccupation, that person is totally deluded. And that is what the ignorant individual's life is. And in this book, Bhaj Govindam, which I think is available in the office, Shankaracharya speaks very beautifully about wealth. He says, Moodha jahihi dhanagam trishna, kurusa buddhim mansi vitrishna, yal labase nich karmo patam, vittam tena vinodai chittam, bhaj govindam, bhaj govindam, bhaj govindam, moodha mate. He says, oh fool, give up longing for wealth. He does not say give up wealth. We are not saying that you give up all your money and donate and become a sadhu and, you know, start wandering in the Himalayas. But this intense longing or this total desire where that becomes your total preoccupation. Wealth not only means money but also power and position and everything else that goes along with it. All my possessions and house and car and all. Yeah, you should have it, but if that becomes your overwhelming preoccupation, so give up that. And he says, when you empty your mind of this desire to possess worldly objects, then that empty mind, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. So what do you do? Fill your mind with the thoughts of the reality. Fill your mind with thoughts of the Lord. You know, whatever form you want to worship Him in. If you want to worship Him as the formless reality, that's fine. Or you want to worship Him as Krishna or Jesus or Shiva or Buddha, it doesn't matter, but fill your mind with the thoughts of the reality. So empty this. So do not all the time of the day and night just spend in, you know, acquiring things for the body or joys and sorrows and success. You know, some people are so obsessed with their work. Day and night they are working, you know, from morning till late at night. They have no time for themselves. They have no time for their family. No time. So they say spend some time in spiritual pursuits. Start thinking about the Lord, you know, do some time in prayer or meditation, read some good books, associate with saintly people, and then spend some time in serving the world as an expression of the reality. As Mahatma Gandhi used to say, he called everybody as Harijans, even the lower castes. Why? Because he said the Lord is in all and I'm serving them all. And so when you serve the world, seeing the reality, then you fill your heart with thoughts of the reality. And then he says, yallabase niche karmo patam vittam tena vinodai chittam. And whatever you acquire, it's not that you don't work, but you work, put an honest day's work, put your best effort, and then at the end of the day or at the end of the month or at the end of the year, whatever you acquire as a result of your honest effort, be content, be satisfied. Do not aim to possess somebody else. tena tyaktena bhunjita. In the Ishavasya Upanishad it says, tena tyaktena bhunjitaha magrida kasya svirdhanam. Be content with what you have. Do not aim to possess somebody else's, you know, property, somebody else's wealth. But whatever you deserve, whatever your hard labor you have done, work hard. They're not saying don't work hard, but at the end of the day, be satisfied that, Lord, be content. Continue to work hard. They're not saying that, you know, if you have only one business and you should not expand to another business. Yeah, if that's what your desire is, do that. But inside, have a level of contentment, have a level of gratitude to the Lord that I'm thankful. And then he says, Bhaj Govindam, Bhurmate, seek the Lord, you fool. So this book, actually, I would recommend to everybody. It's available in the office. It's a very, very practical way of how to live our life. And he has given in some beautiful verses. So he says, these people whose vasanas are reduced, who have gone beyond the pairs of opposites, and whose ego is reduced. Now the ego, I heard somebody describing it very well. It says, most of us have a very strong ego. But the saints, their ego is very minimal. And the example they give is of a peach. You know, there are two kinds of peaches. One is a freestone peach, where you open the peach and that seed just falls out. That's called a freestone. And the other one is called a fixed or a stuck peach, where you open the peach and the seed is so tightly stuck that you actually have to cut the peach out and remove the seed. So most of us are like those fixed peaches, where our ego is so strong that we can't get rid of it. But for a saint, again, as a result of meritorious activities done over numerous lifetimes, they grow up with that attitude where their ego is like that freestone peach. You just open it, instantly falls out. And that is what they say, that when you see these saints, you find that their ego is virtually negligible, is minimal. So that is how one should be, that give up your ego and drop the ego. Ego means, again, this, not only this arrogance, but the sensation of separateness, that I am separate from her, him, and I am superior. And he's, when you see that one Lord everywhere, he says, then that person, then his activities become pure. Then he does not have selfish activities. He does not have, you know, desire-filled activities. His desire is to serve the world. But then when we talk about likes and dislikes, we say, oh, some people, I just can't stand them. And I have read somewhere that these people who are very irritating, it's like a lash in the eye. You know, they call them as they are a lash in the eye. Once you get your eyelash in the eye, how much it hurts, and you want to do anything to get rid of it. You wash the eye, you pull it, you clean it. So some people are like that. When you encounter them, they are irritating, they are bothersome, they are troublesome. And you say, how do I get over the likes and dislikes? You know, certain people, I just can't stand them. And certain people, I love them, I want to embrace them. And certain people, So the saints say that you should go around with a microscope. And what we do is, our microscope, when we look at an individual, we focus on what we don't like. This person, you know, he's like that. Or this person, she is like that. And we shine our microscope on things that we don't like about that person. And what that does is reinforces your dislike. The more you focus on the dislike, the more it makes it stronger. So they say, shine your microscope on things that you like, because everybody is a mixture of good and bad. There is nobody in this world who is perfectly good, and nobody in the world who is perfectly bad. Everybody is a mixture of good and bad. But when you shine your microscope upon things that you like about that person, or things that are good about that person, then slowly you start accepting that person more and more, that this person is not that bad. And once you accept that person and focus on his likes, on things you like, then those qualities become stronger, and then that person also reacts positively towards you. That's what saints say. They say that, oh Lord, when you bring me people that are difficult to deal with, or people that are problems, or people that are hard, or he says, Some people say, oh Lord, why do I have to deal with all these people? Why are you making me suffer? But the saint says, oh Lord, I'm glad you bring such people in front of me, because that teaches me patience, that teaches me love, that teaches me forgiveness. And they say it is through patience, through love, through forgiveness, you slowly sweeten your personality, you reduce your selfish vasanas, and that is the goal. As you act in the world, each one of us is born with certain tendencies, and we have to fulfill those tendencies. That is the reason we took birth, as we studied last week. But while working in the world, I can be exhausting these vasanas. You know, I have a desire to learn music, or I have a desire to teach, or I have a desire to play sports. Yeah, so as I am acting, those particular vasanas are slowly being exhausted. But if I do those activities selfishly, then my vasanas become stronger the more I do it. So as you do your activities unselfishly, your vasanas get reduced. But also in this life, I acquire new vasanas, new desires. You know, I had a desire for music, now I want to learn sports. Or now I, again, we're not saying that there is anything harm in learning new things, but ultimately one has to go beyond desires. So when I am doing activities in the world unselfishly, dedicated to the Lord, even when I am working, even when I am acquiring wealth, even when I am taking care of my children, if I dedicate all activities to the Lord, then I am not acquiring new vasanas. So I am exhausting my old vasanas, I am not acquiring new vasanas. And a mind that is free of vasanas is the only mind that is capable of contemplation. So when you sit for contemplation, when you sit for meditation, your mind runs in 1,000 directions. Again, we're not saying that if your mind is running, one should not sit. Because by the act of sitting for meditation, and when you turn your mind's attention to the Lord within, a large number of vasanas get destroyed. That's why they promote the path of meditation, because through meditation, you can reduce your negativities and come closer to the Lord within. So as you sit for meditation, your mind runs out, but with practice, slowly, as you work in your life, do things unselfishly, serve the world, such a person, he says, Bhajante mam dridha vritaha. Then they approach me with a firm belief that that is my goal in life, that is my purpose in life, and that is what I want to achieve, that is where I want to reach, that is what I want to become. And it says that their desire is very strong. In the Upanishad it says in another place, Na ayam atma balahinena labhyaha. He says, for a weakling person, spiritual path is no good. He or she will never reach. Because if you are weak, you know, you say, chalta hai, you know, if I get it, it's fine. If I don't get it, it's okay. If not this lifetime, maybe next lifetime. Or, you know, I want to be good, but I just can't do it. You know, I want to pray and meditate, but I don't have the time. I have, you know, volunteered to go out and do community service, but today I just don't feel like it. You know, I went to bed late. So if you are a weakling, then you won't progress. Even in the world, if you look at it, the ones who are successful in the Olympics, or the ones who have climbed Mount Everest, or the ones who, you know, made Microsoft like Bill Gates, or the ones who are successful in the business, or the ones who become the president, you know, they have strong will. Even in the world, even in the studies, the one who stands first in the class gets all A+. Even a child, he has to have the desire to succeed. Only then he will succeed or she will succeed. Otherwise, you say, it's okay, if I get a C, how does it matter? You know, it is no big deal. I'll still get promoted to the next class. And such a person will not make anything of their life. So they say that just as in the world, if you want to be, tell our children, if you want to be successful, you want to go to a good college, you have to study, you have to get good grades, then you will get to a good college and then you will be successful. So similarly for us, we are in this college of this world and in the school of this world. And if we want to go to the college of higher studies of higher realization of being one with the Self, then we have to put the right effort. Cleanse your mind of negativities. Fill your mind with thoughts of the Lord. Make possessing Him. Seek the Lord, you fool. That's what He tells us again and again. Bhaj Govindam Bhurmate. Seek the Lord. Seek the Lord, you fool. That is the only purpose of life while you are taking birth. So He says, those whose sins have been destroyed, whose negative actions are gone, who have no selfish desires, and whose whole goal is to serve the mankind, because again, through doing these pure actions, they reach their own divine self. So they say, anything that takes you away from divinity is a sin. Anything that takes you towards divinity is a merit. So any action, you look at it and say, okay, is this taking me towards the Lord? Then it is meritorious. Is it taking me away from the Lord? Then it is sin. Once you have that criteria, then automatically you are automatically doing actions. So they say, turn your mind within and remember that whatever is good is what is taking you towards your divine nature, towards your true self. And by doing those actions, you go beyond likes and dislikes. You know, you go beyond. Again, it does not mean that you become a stone and it's okay if it's hot, it's okay. If it's cold, it's okay. If I'm suffering, it's okay. No. If it's hot, you get up and put on the air conditioning. If it's cold, you put on the heater. If something is giving you joy, yeah, you can enjoy that. If something is giving you sorrow, you can fix it. You know, if you're ill, you don't say, oh, I'm beyond compared of opposites. I have a fever of 102. How does it matter? No, you go take medicine, go see the doctor. But at the end of the day, if there are certain things that you cannot change and you cannot then, you accept them, be content with what you have. And remember that in life, pairs of opposites will come. One day I am healthy, another day I may be unhealthy. One day I am happy, another day I may be unhappy. One day I am successful, everybody is praising me. Tomorrow I may be unsuccessful, everybody may criticize me. But a wise person knows that these fluctuations, these pairs of opposites, are the nature of things. The body that I have is bound to die. The mind I have cannot always be happy. I cannot always have success. And accepting that changes in their life, he remains or she remains established in that reality. And then such a person, it doesn't matter whether you insult him or whether you praise him, he is in that supreme state of joy. And then he realizes that these worldly things do not affect me. That's why Jesus could say that, forgive them, O Lord, for they know not what they do. Because he saw the divinity in all, and at the same time, he was way beyond the body. He was so much way beyond the body that nothing that you could do to his body would affect his inner peace and inner tranquility. So these are the people who, he says, they are dridha vritta. They have firm conviction. They know what they want and they go out and get it. So it's a very, very practical way of how we can function in the world and still keep our mind focused on the reality. Yes?
Like going back there and trying to keep your mind focused on reality. This is something that we can want, but aren't we kind of limited by our karma? We have to work through. So there are certain people who have self-awareness and that can reflect and can reflect upon themselves and why they're doing what they're doing, but there are other people who who can't. And isn't that sort of a measure of their involvement? It is.
Yeah, like the two kinds of peaches, you know, one that easily. So I think the way I look at it is Arjuna asks the same question to Krishna. And Krishna says, through practice. Abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena cha grihyate. Through practice and through detachment. Practice and through detachment. So through applying, like another place I was reading, that this teacher said, that decide, okay, every hour, at least one time I'm going to remember the Lord. So every day, every hour that I'm awake, I'm going to say, at least one time I'm going to remember the Lord. And make that your goal, okay? It's 12 o'clock, I need to think about the Lord. It's 1 o'clock, it's 2 o'clock. So that is one way where you practice that. And then she said, then slowly you can make it every half an hour, you can make it every 15 minutes. But the idea is that through practice, it does not happen overnight, because through so many lifetimes, from the time we were an amoeba till now, we have been at the animal level and the bird and the fish level. Their existence is to take care of their body, you know, because they do not have the intellect. It's not that you blame them. An amoeba is only looking where it can grab the next piece of food and then multiply. So over so many lifetimes, if you believe in multiple births, we have been acquiring all these. So it's not going to happen overnight, and that is why constant effort and constant vigilance. That is what Swami Chinmayananda, another place, he says. He says, quiet, alert, and vigilant. So make your mind quiet, be alert, that let my mind not wander, and then be vigilant, constantly be alert about it. So through practice and through vairagya, through slowly developing detachment. Again, detachment does not mean that you don't love your children or you don't love your possessions or your dog or your husband, but slowly developing, reducing my dependence. Right now we are so dependent on our relatives, our friends, our possessions, our things. But having that attitude that if I have it, it is fine. If I don't have it, it is fine. So that is called vairagya, where you are not so dependent that some people in the stock market crashes and they go and commit suicide. Why? Because their whole existence was that portfolio. So that is called dependence. So as you develop detachment, where if I have it, it's good. You know, if I have the comforts of life, it is fine. But for tomorrow, for some reason, I lost the comforts, I'm still fine. That attitude. So through vairagya and through abhyasa, through practice and through detachment, one can develop that. And by making a habit of remembering the Lord every hour, we can do that. Okay, from now on, today on, I'm going to try and remember Him. Again, if I forgot, it doesn't mean you beat yourself, but then maybe next hour you remember Him twice, every half hour. So the idea is that the more you think about Him, and I think through reading, through contact with saints, and through constant reminder, when you see the sunshine, the sunrise, you think of the Lord, you see the setting of the moon, you see the beautiful flowers, you walk out here in the front, and the gardening committee has done a very good job, all of them, beautiful flowers, you see the Lord shining. Yesterday we had this bhajan program, and this singer was so divine, and one of the songs she says, every flower that is blooming is chanting the name of Krishna. Every bee that is fluttering in the flowers and sucking the honey is chanting the name of Krishna. The wind that is blowing through the trees is chanting the name of Krishna. So everything is repeating the Lord's name, you know, and constantly remembering Him through practice. And also that whatever activities I am doing, it is because of the Lord in me. The fact that I am able to speak right now, it is the knowledge given to me by my teacher and by the Lord. So constantly having that understanding.
Now, spirituality looks at ego negative, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, the ego is negative and you should get rid of ego. The other perspective is that ego is actually an expression of human diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Human mind is diverse. And diversity is its essential nature.
Yes, very good.
So it's not that, you know, ego, you can't say that, you know, just because people have ego, they act by their ego, that doesn't mean, you know, that it should be looked at negatively. Ego, what I think is, whatever, you may do any amount of meditation, you can do any number of, you know, you can be devotee. No, ultimately, the point is, still, the diversity of human mind is inborn, it's inherent, it cannot be absoluted away. It cannot be absoluted into insignificance and, you know, into a nothingness which is called consciousness. The consciousness is like nothingness, it cannot be. Whatever you do, you may, for the period of meditation, the mind may lose its, you know, that, whatever its individuality, but it comes back.
No, very beautiful, you have said it very correctly. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the, I don't know. I don't know if it's a contradiction,
no.
But
It's no contradiction.
The point is, like, individuality, that's why people are diverse, right? Mm-hmm. They cannot be, everybody, you know, their ego will have its nuances or, you know, its differences. It's bound to be there. So I don't know whether spirituality thinks that it can, you know, that there is a way, ultimate, the goal is that all this can be absoluted away or it can be totally resolved into a common thing. Because what it does is it negates the very concept of individuality. You know, likes and dislikes are bound to be there. Yes, we may reduce our dislike, but there are certain things which cannot be reduced.
I agree with you 100%. I think I'd like to answer that. Spirituality is not against individuality. You know, that is the beauty of his creation. Now look at here, every individual, they're different in appearance, they're different in fingerprints, they're different in emotions, they're different in thoughts, they're different in ideas. That's the beauty. They say not every snowflake is exactly the same, not every leaf is exactly the same. So how can we all be one? We are not saying that each and every one of us loses our individual and becomes one homogeneous mass. No, each and every one of us is a unique creation of God, created with our own strengths and our own weaknesses. And that is what makes us unique. And we have certain likes and certain dislikes. But a saint, two things he or she does. First of all, they accept people as they are without trying to say that this person is good or that person is bad. He accepts people with their faults. He embraces everybody. There is a mother, Karuna Mahima, not Karuna, Ammachi, who comes from India. And she's called as the embracing saint, where everybody who goes to her, she embraces them. Doesn't matter who, and sometimes there are 1,000 people standing in line, and she'll patiently, 3 hours, 4 hours, embrace. And just being in her presence, people feel. So a saint, A, accepts everybody. Secondly, underneath that diversity, he sees that oneness, which is the infinite consciousness, which is the same. The consciousness in you is the same as the consciousness in me. So that is the uniqueness. That is the uniqueness is there, but that is the common thread. Even Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, I am the thread that holds the whole universe together. So even though each and every one of us are different and we have our likes and dislikes, but in reality, I am that consciousness, and every one of us is that one consciousness. So that is the common thread. Not the individual, not the body. My body is different from her body, and her body and his body. The body is different, the mind is different, the ideas are different, the desires are different. But the common thread that is holding us is that consciousness. You can call it Krishna, you can call it Father in Heaven, Brahman, or Lord. But they focus on that, and that's why they're able to love everybody unconditionally, because they see that my Lord who has created me has also created everybody. And so they have total love. So ego does not mean that you totally give up your likes and dislikes and you become like a vegetable, but constantly remember that I am that divinity, and when likes and dislikes happen, do not give too much importance to them. That is the idea. So we are not saying that the whole humanity will become one mass. Everybody will, you know, that's like saying that everybody in the world should wear a brown coat. You know, Swami Tejomayananda, he says, it's like saying everybody in this world should wear a brown coat, or everybody in this world should only eat Indian food, or should only eat Chinese food. You know, there are, you know what, 1 billion Chinese who like Chinese food. There are people, and even in the US, we find such a variety of people from all over the world. There are foods from all over the world. Look at the clothes people are wearing. Are a variety of clothes, variety of foods, variety of, you know, entertainment. So we're not saying that everybody should start eating the one kind of food or wearing one kind of clothes, but seeing the diversity, but recognize the divinity underneath. And I think your point is excellent.
Yeah, even love also, like love is necessary. But think of a hypothetical situation where everybody starts loving. We will start tiring of that. The point is, this is, you know, diversity, whatever, I mean, at some point, that diversity can be negative, but ultimately, the difference has to be there. Otherwise, I don't think, even if everybody starts loving and being nice, you'll get tired of that.
No, it's never going to happen. See, it's never, it's a utopia. It will never happen that, see, because people are in all stages of evolution. See, there are some people who are very animal-like, some people who are little bit human, and then there are the saints. So, from animals, we are constantly evolving. So, some people are hateful, some people are wicked. Now, the people in Africa who are going around and slaughtering people, I mean, they are very far away from evolution. And if they have killed 100 women and children, they are going to have to suffer the consequences of their actions, either in this life, and if they do, if not, it will... So the point is that there are stages of evolution. So to think that everybody will become like Eckhart Tolle or will become like Jesus or will become like Shankaracharya or Swami Chinmayananda is not going to happen. Through that is the diversity. People are evolving, and what I have to look at, the way I look at this scripture is that where am I on this ladder? Forget about what people are doing in Africa, forget about what somebody is doing in Germany, or forget about what is somebody doing in Asia. But how does this book apply to me and make me a better individual? That, I think, is that's how I look at this, this Bhagavad Gita, that am I standing?
I, one of the understanding, I think it's an understanding that I got from this, is our ego and our body and mind and intellect, that's the glue that holds us together in this shape and form.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so hard to know God because God is formless and shapeless, and it's pure consciousness, and I can't even conceive of that. And if we were to get rid of our ego and all that, and we do get rid of it maybe when we die, you know, and somehow get rid of our ego and all, then we become mm-hmm. part of that pure consciousness. But I can't even conceive of that here. And it's all that stuff that's holding us together. And we all have the same qualities. We all have the same chemicals in our brain and the same, you know, love, but there are different kinds of love and different, mm-hmm. you know, we all have
proportions,
exactly, yeah, and of all of the qualities that we have in humility and anger and just, there are so many, and we all have different proportions, so that's what makes us all so
and
different.
Actually, you know, other thing is, like, when I was trying to read some of the, like, Hindu schools of thought, mm-hmm. it's, you know, what I'm thinking is, it's like, it's because we are, you know, whatever discussion we have is all driven basically by Vedanta school of thought.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the grip that is still there, so strong in the Indian consciousness. But if you look at other schools of thought, like Nyaya school of thought, it says that, you know, your soul, even if it's there, it needs the body, mind, and intellect. Without that, the soul cannot exist.
Yes.
You know,
that's
very true.
You know, that's the, so, I don't know, it's hard to reconcile these things, but
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what, but Vedanta somehow tries to make that distinction between the body, mind, and intellect on the one hand, and soul on the other, which some other schools of thought don't entirely agree with.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a, you know.
Right. Hey, but we are saying that the consciousness needs the body, mind, and intellect to function. But while you are functioning in the world, either you can say, I am this body, mind, and intellect, then you will suffer even the body is declining. But if you say, I am the consciousness, and that is what actually we are going to talk in the next verse, and thank you for bringing that up. But we'll talk about that. That is exactly the subject of the next verse. How this consciousness gets caught up in the five sheets. How this consciousness gets caught up in the five sheets. You know that you are talking about the Nyaya school? Exactly the same. So we'll do that in the next verse.